Everybody, my name is Ryan White, and this is the first of my Concepts Blocks teachings, where we're going to take an overview and a kind of a cliff notes, if you will, version of the teaching that that this will be focusing on, and just condense it all down into an overview for those of you who want to go back and review it per se, or for people who some people just don't have the time to listen to 3 to 4 hours of teaching. Which this subject matter that we will be covering today is going to go into a lot more in-depth in the future. So we will have a full series on this. But to begin with here, it's just going to be a broad overview of what I would call concept blocks. So today's subject is called the rites of passage. Now, some of you may be familiar with this terminology, rites of passage. It's often used in connection with a child going from childhood to adolescence, or from a child to an adulthood. They use the term rites of passage. This terminology actually came from an author back in the early 1900s named Arnold Van Gennep. He kind of discovered the phenomenon and developed it a little bit, and then it was further developed by Victor Turner. Both of those names, you can go into the slideshow for this teaching and you can see the names of these people and look at their books and stuff. And both of them kind of developed this concept, shall we call it. Now, of course, if you go into the scriptures themselves, you're not going to find anything labeled the rites of passage, because this is simply a 20th century or 19th century labeling of a concept that has existed, I believe, from the very beginning. It was definitely very present in the ancient Near East. And that's actually where I first came into contact with the concept, was when I was studying into Leviticus 14. Now, Leviticus 14 is the purification of the ex-leper, or the person who was afflicted with a skin disease, because we know they weren't technically a leper. And when you study this ritual here, what you have is you have this kind of Yom Kippur-esque ritual being performed outside the camp. The two birds, one is killed and one is released for the purification of this leper. Now the leper afterwards is let inside the camp, and then he has to stay, he's in the camp, but he has to stay outside of his house for 7 days. And then afterwards there's a purification ritual, and then the following day he can bring sacrifices to the temple, and then he is completely reintegrated into the covenant community. And so as I'm studying this, I'm like, well, what is up with the 7 days? Because we see this in other areas of scripture. There's the returning from battle, they had to do this, right? Circumcision, you wait until the 8th day. There's a lot of these rituals, wait period, rituals. The same thing with the priesthood, when they inducted Aharon and his sons into the priesthood, there was this period of waiting with rituals on either end. So I started to study into the matter, and it really has become quite an amazing subject for me. So let's get right into this. What are the rites of passage? Now, the rites of passage is a process which occurs of times of significant change, because there's such a huge difference between point A and point B that you cannot simply go immediately from there. For example, the person who was afflicted with leprosy, he's been cured now, but because there was such a change in his life at that point, he cannot go from there to being right back in the covenant community instantaneously. There has to be a passage. One of the authors, Roland DeVoe was his name, in his book Ancient Israel, you can see this on page 460 and 465, he talks about that there is so great a difference between the profane and the sacred worlds that a man cannot pass between the two without first undergoing an intermediate stage, what we would call here the rites of passage. Another example you could see actually just in nature is that of a caterpillar going from a butterfly, or going to a butterfly, sorry. Whenever a caterpillar wants to go to a butterfly, it doesn't just poof, you know, it doesn't instantaneously go through this change, because there's such a huge difference between this little bug that kind of inches along, you know, across your tree branch or whatever, into a butterfly with these brilliant, amazing colors that God has created for them, that you cannot go between those two instantaneously. And so the caterpillar has to go into a cocoon, into this transitional phase, before it can actually emerge as that butterfly that God created it to eventually become. So these rites were actually very well known throughout the ancient Near East. And what they did is they consisted of three parts that, depending on the rite, one may be emphasized over the other. It just kind of depends on exactly what the ritual is, what the outcome is, and everything else as to which one is emphasized more than the other. So let's go, and you can see here, I'm going to pull it up on the screen here, and we have this diagram that shows us the three different parts of the rites of passage. So the first one, or the first thing that we have, is we have to have rites of separation. You're separated out from being that old man, because what we see here on the slide is we're going from being the old man to the new man. Now this could be like the old territory to the new territory, etc. Whatever the passage is, but you're going from the old to the new. And so first you have to go undergo separation, and then after you've undergone the separation, you go through the rites of transition, often called the liminal period. Now that's a very interesting concept or terminology, the liminal period, because the term liminal, L-I-M-I-N-A-L, is actually Latin for threshold. Now I don't know how many of you have gone out and read the book, or at least listened to the teaching by Rico Cortez of Wisdom and Torah. It's on the Threshold Covenant. It's a book by Henry Clay Trumbull. Very, very enlightening book as to scripture. For example, the Passover was a threshold covenant. There's a lot of stuff. That's why the animals were in the temple. They were taken to the threshold of the temple and killed there, is because it was a very important thing. Now, within the rites of passage, we've got to understand the concept of old to new. It can also be applied to being like outside of the house to inside of a house. Right? These are two different worlds. There's the outdoor world, and then there's the indoor world. And what separates the two? It's the threshold, the door with the threshold there. And so what the rites of passage are is kind of, it's that passing over that threshold, where if you were to actually stand in a doorway, you would actually, part of you would be in one world, and part of you would be in another world. You're in that transitional phase. And it's kind of funny, it reminds me of my childhood when I would be sent to my room when I would get in trouble. Oftentimes I would open up the door and I would keep one foot in the room, and I'm like leaning out the hallway, and you know, whenever my parents would say anything, I'm like, oh, I'm still in my room. You know, part of me is still in the room, part of me is here. But what this rites of passage is doing, it's taking that concept that there's one world here and there's another world here, and you have to go between them, and you have to separate from the one world, the rites of separation. You have to transition into the new world, and then you're finally incorporated into that new world. And we'll go back to the concept of old man to new man. For example, within the rites of, with the leper, the ex-leper, he's been cured of his leprosy, but he's still in that defiled state that's kind of akin to being a Gentile, a pagan, right, or someone who is dead. Let's put it that way, because when you look at the descriptions of what we term leprosy, it's actually more akin to someone who looks like they're dead. And so they're going from the world of the dead, i.e. the old man, to the world of the living, i.e. the new man. And so what they must first do is they have to separate out. You remove all sorts of anything to do with that. And this is typically done through several different things. First off, shaving, cutting of nails, things like that. That's taking off the parts of you that were existed during that time of an old man. And we can see that in the scripture, even with leprosy. It says here in, let's go to Leviticus 14 here. So we're going to go to Leviticus 14. You can see it on the screen here, verse 7. And it says, "And he shall sprinkle it seven times on him who is to be cleansed from leprosy, and pronounce him clean, and shall let a live bird in the field." Sorry, I think I'm in the... Oh, sorry, next verse here. "And he who is to be cleansed shall wash his garments, shall shave off his hair, and wash himself in water, and shall be clean. And then he is to come into the camp, but remain outside of his tent for 7 days." So with this, we see this shaving of the hair, and we also see the washing of water. And as we will develop a little bit later on in the series, the whole concept behind the mikvah, or the baptism, is a rite of separation. We know that with baptism, what it's doing is it's symbolic of your death and your resurrection. You die to your old self, to your sinner, to the sinner that you used to be, and you resurrect as a new man in Messiah. And Paul talks about that. In fact, Paul talks a lot about concepts that are tied into this rites of passage, which we will, of course, go into later on here in the series. And that's another thing that's really important to understand, is that the rites of separation were typically very symbolic. The person wasn't actually dying and being resurrected. They were simply undergoing a ritual that was symbolic of that separation. Now, on the other hand, the rites of incorporation, where they're actually incorporated in and now they're part of the covenant community, such as that the ex-leper who, after his sacrifices, he is now a fully fledged member of Israel with every right and responsibility of all other members. He can now go to the temple and worship at the temple because he has been completely purified. And so the rites of incorporation are very realistic. If you go, I have a teaching out called Sin and Sacrifice in Ancient Israel, and it goes into what exactly was the function of these offerings, of the chata'at, what's typically called the sin offering, but should be called the purification offering. These weren't just symbolic acts. These were very real acts that occurred that literally were wiping away the impurity on the altar caused by this person's prolonged source of contamination here. So remember, rites of separation are highly symbolic, whereas rites of incorporation are realistic. For example, circumcision is done on the eighth day. It is a rite of incorporation. Once your child has been circumcised on the eighth day, he is incorporated into a full-blooded member of the Israelite community. So it's a very real process. He literally has a covenant cut into his body. Now, that's not to say, you know, these are kind of general things. And so, you know, there's a little give and take here and there, depending on the ritual and what was going on. So we can, you know, let's not get locked into this, because this isn't, like I said, this isn't something that's laid out in Scripture. This is something that is a phenomenon, or cultural phenomenon, whatever you want to call it, that's going on from the very beginning of time all the way until present day. I actually underwent the rites of passage because I was a military member. I was in the U.S. Navy. And so what happened? One day I was a civilian. The next day I had to go the rites of passage. I couldn't just go from being a civilian to being a military member. The change was such a great change that there was a need for the rites of passage. And so if any of you have ever been in the military, you should start to understand what I'm talking about here and realize that you too have gone through these rites of passage. And what we call them today in the military is boot camp, right? Boot camp is what is the thing that separates you from civilian life and military life. When I first got to boot camp, the first thing that they did was they took me into an area, I stripped off all my clothes, they gave me their little, you know, some underwear basically, they took me straight over to the barber, and they shaved my head, and then they sent me into the showers. So right there, you have the exact same thing that was happening 3,500 years ago with the rites of purification of a leper. I was shaved. My clothes were changed, which we don't see in leprosy, but we'll see in other things. But they laundered their clothes, at least here. And then finally, you know, I was bathed. It was essentially, I don't want to call it a baptism, but I mean, you know, the same concept. I was going into water to purify myself. Now, after these rites of separation, I was a member of the U.S. military. I did have a rank. I got a military paycheck. In fact, I was even called by a military name. But I was not really, at that point, I was not the same as the actual active duty military who were fighting wars in Afghanistan, who were, you know, here doing whatever in the U.S. on the bases. That was not my role. I was still in the rites of passage. And what's really interesting is all of us, when I went in, because of the specialty I went into, I went in at a higher pay grade than others. But that did not matter, because during the rites of transition, everyone is made the same. Remember when Paul talks about there's neither Jew nor Greek or man or woman? All of those things, when he's talking about that, he's talking about the rites of passage. That's during that transitional phase, the rites of transition. Everyone, it didn't matter if you were the chief's son or if you were the lowliest peasant. During that transitional period, you are equal across the board. And you have a tutor or an instructor or a drill sergeant or whatever you want to call it over you. Now, the purpose of these rites of transition are to prepare you for the life that you were going to leave once you go through the rites of incorporation. So they're preparing you for that covenant life. Oftentimes, these rites of transition are kind of glossed over. They don't have a lot of explanation in them. For example, we have the Exodus from Egypt. What goes on there? When we read about the Exodus from slavery to freedom in the land of Israel, we have a lot of description about what goes on at the beginning, and then kind of just they wandered 40 years in the wilderness, and all of a sudden a big description on what goes on at the end. That middle, that transitional period is really not discussed, because that's a time of training, of trials, and of testing. It's preparing you for that life. And beyond that, you know, looking back at boot camp and stuff in the military, and I'm not just saying that boot camp is exactly what the scriptures is, but we can see this in the scriptures, and we can see this cross-culturally in the ancient Near East, in the African nations that Van Gennep studied and everything like that, is that during this trial and the stuff that's going on here, the testing, they had to, and I had to be a lot more hyper aware, we'll say, and more vigilant of the commandments. When I was in the military, we had our own separate commandments, shall we call them. We had our own separate laws. It was called the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And just like the Torah tells you to post them on your doorposts, on your gates, we had the UCMJ posted on various places. They actually had them in the bathrooms, on the back of the stall. You'd sit there and you have the UCMJ to read. And so it kind of brings to light those commandments. When you have those there all the time, if you have those commandments written on your doorpost, written around the place, you see them and they become part of you. You don't even have to think about them. And so this transitional period, the whole concept here is that you're learning And so there's even a higher focus on the commandments. Whereas after you've been incorporated, once I was in the military, I still had those same commandments, but or laws, shall we call them, but they were incorporated into me. I didn't have to sit there and think about what I was doing. I automatically knew how to operate within the law code that was given for me. And the same thing happens with us in the Torah. When we come into the Torah, we are going through a learning phase. There's a hyper awareness of the commandments, right? And we're trying to figure out, I've got to make sure my tzitzit are right. I've got to make sure that everything doesn't contain pork. All of this stuff. Now, that's not to say once we're outside of that period that suddenly the law is done away with. This is what all the writers of the New Testament were talking about. It's not that, especially Paul. Paul was not saying that the law is done away with. He's simply saying the law was the tutor, and now we've moved beyond that, that we don't have to focus on the nitty-gritty of the law, because that's incorporated into us. We understand how to wear tzitzit. We understand, what not to eat, what to eat, the laws of purity. Now let's move beyond that, and still in keeping with that, but learn the greater things, if that makes sense. I hope you don't think that I'm a heretic for saying this. I love the Torah. I would never tell you not to study it, and I'm not telling you just not to study it here. I'm just trying to explain what Paul is talking about, is that once you've gone through that tutorage period, you go to a period that where you don't forget what you learned, but that's not your focus. Now you can focus on relationship, if that makes sense. So we go through the rites of transition, and eventually we get to the rites of incorporation, which incorporation takes you from being just the group of transitional people. I forget the terminology that they use there. Into you are now fully incorporated into that body. Now you have title, you have rank, you have position, you have purpose, right? How many of you, especially in your first years of Torah, you've just felt you were kind of wandering around, you didn't know, you were excited to learn and all this stuff, but you didn't really feel that you had a function within the body of Messiah? I know that for me. I didn't know what my role was. Well, that's because I was in a transitional period, and I don't know that I'm fully out of this transitional period. I think that there's different layers to this. I think we can be in a certain rites of passage, but there's a greater rite of passage that it lasts our entire lifetime. But once you've gotten past that, you're incorporated into the covenant community, and now you suddenly have a role. And we've got to understand that our roles are very important and can be very unique. When I was in the military, my role was to operate a nuclear power plant. That meant that was what I would do. I could do other things, but that was my sole focus. I didn't go pick up a machine gun and storm some Afghani base. That was not my role. And we've got to realize in the kingdom, our role is, we each have a separate role. Now, of course, maybe our role can change. In the military, I could have changed roles, but during that time in that role, that was my focus. Right now, I've been called to get on here and share with you these wonderful things to help teach you the understanding of the Torah. That's my role right now. And that does not make me any more important than the person listening to me, because the person listening to me might be sharing this with other people. There's so much out there that we can go into, and I just want to put out, we've got to understand that just because one person's doing one thing which may seem super cool or super important, that doesn't mean that other things can't are not important, right? There's always a need for people to pray with people, to evangelize. There's all these different roles out there. No one is more important than the other. It's just like trying to take a car and say, what's the most important part of the engine or of the car? Well, people go, well, the engine, it's super cool, it makes loud noises. Well, guess what? If you don't have tires, what's the point of having the engine? Nothing, right? So we've got to understand that these are Once we've gone past this incorporation, God gives us roles, and He gives us them in different means. It's, you know, there's no one person sitting there in church going, "You're a teacher, you're a intercessor, you're this, you're that." It's all where the Spirit of God leads us into our roles, but they are very important that we do follow these roles. So we've just got a couple more minutes here. But I wanted to talk about a couple of the times when the rites of passage were performed. The one that a lot of people would be familiar with would be childbirth, right? With the circumcision, you've got the birth of the child, and then you've got 8-day waiting period, and then you got the circumcision. Social puberty. Now, when I say social puberty, I mean the point in time when a child is recognized as no longer being a child, but as being an adult. For example, the bar mitzvah. Right, the bar mitzvah is when it doesn't matter if the child has actually hit puberty or not, and that's why we use the term social puberty. It doesn't matter about the physiological changes. It's simply a marking point in the person's life where they are now considered to be an adult and to be accountable. Rites of passage were also used very heavily with adoption. The whole process of going from being single to being married, you go through the betrothal period, right? The betrothal period, what is that? That's a rite of passage. That's why there's rituals when you first become engaged or betrothed, and then there's a whole period there where you're kind of learning, or you should be learning how to live a married life. Not saying that you're supposed to be living together, right? I'm not trying to get into that in any means, but once you're betrothed, you know that you're going to be married, so you're going to be learning how to live that life. For example, that's why oftentimes in the ancient Near East, the daughter, once they're betrothed, the daughter would go and live with the groom's family because she'd be groomed, or she would learn how to be a married woman. And then you obviously have the marriage rites. Parenthood. Death. Death was a very important one we'll talk about later on in the series. Occupational specialization, just like when you graduate college and you're going to go off and you're going to be a nurse or a doctor or whatever else, they have a ceremony. Why do they have, what's the point of having a ceremony, right? Does it change anything? No, but it's a rite of passage. It's that rite of incorporation. You do these ritualistic behaviors in order to show the transition from being a non-working student to being an employed, specialized doctor, nurse, pilot, whatever. Religious conversion, which we'll talk about later on in the series. Transition into a new country. We don't see this very much anymore, but did you know that every country used to have a DMZ? Just like between North and South Korea, there was like a DMZ. There's a liminal zone there, and that's where all sorts of important rituals would take place. That's where they would have battles, that's where they'd have marketplaces, all these important things. We talked about the entering into a house, that liminal zone in a house, and that's exactly why in the ancient Near East, a thief would never just walk in the front door. You could leave your front door open, but the thief knew not to go through that front door. They would go through a window, they would dig under the wall, whatever means, but they would not go through that front door because they understood that rite of passage and the protection and cursing associated with going through that door if you weren't an invited guest. Another very important one is the changes in the seasons. Anytime there was a change from summer to winter, from winter to summer, things like that, that was a rite of passage. Have you ever wondered why it is that the spring and fall feasts are 7-day feasts, and you have a Sabbath on one end and a Sabbath on the other? Rites of passage. That's right. So, obviously, there's a lot of stuff that we can go into, and a lot of stuff that we are going to go into past this, but this is just a general overview. Like I said, this is a concept block teaching for you to come back and review whenever you want to, or if this is all it takes for you, great. I will be posting a slideshow on my website on Wisdom and Taurus, so you can check that out and look at some of these things. And I hope to see you back when we go into the full series. So until next time, shalom. He still speaks from heaven each and every day. I'll let Yisrael say, we will.